Okay, so it's Paul Deisinger here, and I have my dad, Edwin Deisinger, with me. And just wanted to share really quickly at the beginning of this conference call about, you know, this is the time of year to start really getting into planning our gardens. And so just wanted to touch on a few highlights in our planning our gardens. There's a couple different things, well, three main things that I would highly suggest everyone to do right off from the start. And the first one is to choose your season. And that might seem kind of like a funny thing to think about. And for most people, you know, obviously that's going to be choosing to grow in the summer, probably into the fall. But, you know, you can grow all year round. And if you're thinking about choosing your season, there's things that you can be planting pretty much all year round. In fact, you could be planting some cold weather things now that would be maturing. Of course, it's going to depend on where you live, but it could be maturing early in the spring and such. So choosing your season is part of planning your garden. But then as soon as you know that, then there's the aspect of choosing your seeds and choosing what you want to grow. And, of course, that goes into choosing what plants you want, what veggies you want to grow. And it kind of is connected with choosing your season because it is connected with when those plants grow the best. If you're growing cold, if you're wanting to grow cold weather crops, it's important to make sure that you get those put in early enough so that they can be in the cool weather, or you're going to have to wait until later. Again, that's depending on where you live and how cold it gets where you are, even in the summer. For instance, where we are here in Tennessee, lettuce just doesn't grow very well in the summer. It's too hot and it bolts really quickly. And so to have the best heads of lettuce, we grow them in the fall, through the winter, and in the early spring. So all of that comes into play when it comes into choosing your seeds. And also with choosing your seeds, and choosing what you want to grow, you'll want to make note of any cover crops that you're wanting to grow. And make sure that you're incorporating those into your garden plan, and you can put that in the list of seeds that you want to purchase, and you can make a big seed order all at once. And then the last one, the third one here, is marking your calendar and making your calendar out. And this is what I'd really highly suggest everyone do, is really plan out their calendar well. Straight from the beginning, plan when you'll be growing each crop, and then go ahead and mark in the dates. Mark in the dates of when you're wanting to plant your crops, when you should be transplanting them, if you're transplanting them. And you know, it can even be helpful to draw this out visually so that you can kind of see a whole visual plan of how your garden plan is going to be. And then you can also include in there your cover crops. And inside the course, you know, I've linked over to a couple planning resources that can be really helpful for people when it comes to planning your garden. So that's just a quick little overview about planning your season. And again, I would highly encourage everyone to make a good plan for their season right off from the start. It's just incredibly useful and incredibly helpful for making sure that your garden is up and running and not getting into the stress of coming into the middle of your season or coming into the summer and not knowing what you should be growing when. It's just always nice to have a plan that you can just take a look at whatever week you're on and know what you should be growing. I mean, this is something that we can grow in because we have not always had a good plan. In fact, I think we still need to come up with a good plan for our garden. So it's something that we can all grow in and something that can make gardening so much more efficient. So that was just a quick overview with planning your garden. And now I'm going to go ahead and open up the time to talk together. And actually, it looks like we just have one guest on today. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone and we can just have a real nice conference time talking together about anything that you want to talk about your garden, if we want to go into any more details. Oops.
Yeah, Paul, this is Gary. It sounds like I'm the only one on.
Hey, Jerry. Yeah, great to, have you on. I think, yeah, it looks like you're the only one on this time. In case someone else still might jump on later, but we might as well give the time to you. And
well, I appreciate all you're doing and out there and helping us out and all that. It's been good. I pretty well keep up. I've got one thing to listen to, and that's it. I've got them all, you know, I listen and file them and everything else so for archives. So that's been good. Thank you, Paul.
That's great to hear. I really appreciate it, Jerry, and praise the Lord. I'm glad to help out wherever I can.
just a little bit. I moved to Tennessee from Kentucky, so totally new experience as to what the weather and everything.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Paul. It works.
Okay, we got it here. Right, so you were just asking about timetables, like when to, I'm guessing, so you're talking about like when to plant different types of vegetable crops.
Yes, like you were talking about on the introduction.
Yes, yes. Okay, yeah, that's a really good question, and it kind of comes down to depends on what you want to grow, because each different vegetable kind of has its own little niche. It has its own sweet spot that where it grows best, where it's got the best timing for planting it, for harvesting it. And so you mentioned that you just moved to the Tennessee area, right?
Yes, from Kentucky, and then previous to that we were in Berrien Springs.
Okay. So you're in a similar planting zone that we are probably.
This is Edwin. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Edwin. Nice to see you or hear you again.
Yeah. Which part of Tennessee are you in?
I'm in Ottawa, Collegedale, Chattanooga.
All right. Okay. So,
we're going to break up a piece of fallow ground and start and go from there.
Yeah. Are there any particular crops that you're interested in a schedule for?
Well, like the lettuce and the greens and the onions and I know the green beans and the corn come later and tomatoes and broccoli, spinach, pumpkin, squash.
Okay, basically the whole garden.
Yeah, and then also we want to put out some annual stuff or perennial stuff too, like raspberries, rhubarb, things like that too.
Yeah. Just quickly, I'll tell you, this isn't raspberry country. We grow raspberries, but we find that after 3 or 4 years we need to plant new ones to, because they just start producing smaller and smaller berries, and the disease pressure is kind of hard on them here. They like it better.
Is that right? And I've read, different varieties and so on, but the different seed catalogs. And so, again, I don't know what does halfway decent here or if doesn't.
Well, there might be some varieties that do. You know, we basically tried one variety, and that was our experience with it.
So, in other words, you give up on them or pretty well?
Oh, we still do them. We try to grow them for about 3 years, and then we we plant new stock.
Okay. And last year, I helped my son put out some blueberries. And so it looks like we've got about 95% of them made it through the winter. We've got buds on them already. And so
great.
I'm not sure how good that is in this area. I know up in Michigan we had lots of blueberries, but I didn't know how it was here in Tennessee.
They do well here. Yeah, we have a few on the farm, and we're trying to for the last 3 years now we've been trying to put in about 50 or so new bushes each year, and they do good here.
Hey there, Jerry.
Hello.
Hey, sorry, I'm driving. I'm just going to sit alongside the road here, or maybe cruise up to off ramp and sit, so we can finish this.
Okay.
But you folks planting different crops like sure crop and different things as far as blueberries, or you find any particular one do better than the other, or?
We've just planted a variety of you know, high bush and low bush, so that we will have berries, you know, through the whole season.
Right.
When's coming?
Earlys and laters and so on.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't been at it long enough for me to recommend certain varieties.
Okay. Do you mulch them in? You leave them just tilled soil around them? I've heard some that say that they've done well with mulching with the wood chips. I've heard others. What's your recommendation? What do you find then?
Yeah, well, you know, really interesting little note here. My brother-in-law, David, planted some blueberries, and he planted them all in a row, and he decided to go ahead and mulch one of them just to try it out, just to see what would happen. And it's pretty amazing. We have a picture of it. I should actually make a little blog post on it or something. And it was just absolutely incredible. The one that was mulched just did so much better. It was much more lush. It grew much larger, and you can see it in the picture just next to the other ones that weren't mulched, and they're just scrawny little things in comparison. And, you know, as far as we can tell, that was the only difference, was that the one was mulched and the other ones weren't. Of course, they're all just right next to each other in a line. So we went – so back over on Bountiful Blessings Farm, we decided to go ahead and mulch all our blueberries as well. So, yeah, I would encourage you to mulch them. At least from what we've seen, it looks like mulching them can be really beneficial.
Paul, what are you mulching them with? You mulch them with wood chips? You mulching them with pine needles?
Wood chips, I believe.
Okay.
And we've done it with... Was it with wood chips or with the leaf mulch that we did it?
We used wood chips.
Yeah, it was with the wood chip mulch.
Okay. Just from the chippers.
Yeah. He got his chips from, you know, there was a tree trimmer in the area, and we asked for the wood chips.
Yeah. Okay. We've got some on the place that way. We did the same thing. They were going along the road, and they, you know, we had it to dump, and they did. So we'll be doing some more of that. So I didn't know whether you was mulching with that or pine needles or exactly what. The person that I was talking to, they mulched them with like 8-10 inches of wood chips, and they said they really did well too.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, Edward.
Yeah, for other garden crops, I'd like to recommend a resource. There is a seed catalog called Southern Exposure.
Yes, sir. I've heard of it.
They're located in Virginia, and so the climate that they're dealing with is fairly similar to ours. And they have a—I don't know what to call it—a a schedule,
a planting schedule
for, you know, for most of your garden crops. And they'll show you the window that they have found works best to plant those crops. So you can go to their website to get it, or I don't remember if it's in the – it's sometimes in their catalog, too, their printed catalog, but it's on their website.
Okay.
I would recommend – they actually have – they do it for three zones, the coastal zone, the – you know, then the inland plain, and then the mountains.
Uh-huh.
And I found that their middle one, the inland plain, is the one that seems, you know, I've looked at certain crops that we have found, you know, we're happy with the times that we have found from our experience to be good times to plant, and compared with theirs, and it seems that middle schedule is the one that is closest to ours.
Okay, good. The two or three other questions. I know that you folks have a tiller that you run behind your Kubota. It's not a regular tiller. It's a paddler or whatever.
Spader.
Spader, that's it.
Yeah.
What do you think? And is that the way to go?
We like it a lot. They are fairly expensive, and so, you know, unless you're you know, have money or are, you know, pretty serious about growing or growing for market, I don't know if worthwhile for you. You can, are you familiar with the BCS walking tractors?
Yes, I've looked at them online and different things. I know Kubota makes one, a diesel one, and the BCS or X, whatever, you know, I've seen theirs online too, but haven't been able to find a local dealer.
Well, there's one up in Kentucky.
The dealer.
Yeah, he's called Earth Tools.
I have a older Troy, and so then I heard about these as well, and I have no experience with them other than the Troy.
Yeah. Anyways, he sells a spader for the BCS as well.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, but you'd have to have the largest size BCS.
For horsepower, for turning it.
Yeah, and also just for size, because the spader, you know, to get those spades into the ground, it tends to make the tractor jump around.
Okay.
You almost need a certain amount of bulk or weight to get it to really go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, we tried one of those and then decided not to get it because we already had the spader for the tractor, and we just went with a tiller for the BCS.
Oh, so you have a BCS tiller then?
Yeah, we have a BCS with a tiller on it, and then we have the tractor with the spader.
So what do you think of the BCS?
We like it, and it's well used. We have a number of, we actually have quite a few different implements for it.
Uh-huh.
We have a flail mower. We got the whole get up for doing hay with it, a sickle bar and a hay rake and a baler. And
oh, you bale it? You bale the hay too with this?
You can, yeah. It makes little round bales that are about 40 to 60 pounds.
A little smaller than a square bale, normal square bale.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, rectangle farm bale, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Then evidently you use it also for cutting for mulch, and then you probably use your spader then for turning it under?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll use the flail mower to mow our cover crop, and then we'll use the spader to turn it in.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, what's nice about the spader is it's not stirring up the soil and beating it up as much as, like, a rototiller.
Yeah.
A lot more gentle.
It'll go quite a bit deeper. It'll go down 6 or 8 inches.
The spader versus the tiller?
Yeah.
Do you folks subsoil?
We do. We don't do a lot of it, but we, you know, every once in a while we'll come through and subsoil.
Okay.
So how big an area are you looking at working up?
Well, I want to start halfway decent or small for so that I can take care of it besides working full time. But eventually, you know, 2 acres would not be out of the question, and it could expand to 10 or 15 with trees and blueberries and all that stuff.
Wow. Wow. So are you, I mean, if you expanded to that size, would you be thinking of growing for market then?
Yeah, we have, where we're situated and all that is, you know, a drive-by would work real good.
Huh. That would be nice.
So that they could pull in and around and out and
mm-hmm.
and basically sell from a little lean-to or shed-like and under the trees and different things like that.
Yeah.
It'd be something, you know, also for the granddaughter to do, help out and so on in the summer as well, besides preserving, learn, so she could learn how to do this stuff and preserve for the winter as well.
Sure.
Yeah, that's great.
And I think it's something that, you know, we need to teach our kids and grandkids how to do this stuff.
That's right. And that, I mean, that's an amazing thing for you to do with them. It'll tie you to them in lots of different ways. Give them lots of
you know,
memories.
Yeah, I think also, you know, it would be, I don't know how it can be done or anything, but help encourage others in the community to learn how to do this, and that way they know where the food is coming from and try to get a better quality of food too.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been doing a lot of reading and research and different things on high mineralization of food and where the food is at now as far as mineralization. And so
yeah,
that's my headset right now.
Okay. Yeah. That's something that we're learning more and more about ourselves, and I really believe that's important.
I'm guessing that you've probably heard of Bob Gregory.
Went to his class a year or so ago. Almost, probably 2 years ago. Bob Gregory, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that
I have his
a lot more detail, yeah, with the soil and mineralization.
Also, I've been doing and reading and subscribed to John Frank in regards to ag. Forgot the name of the thing now. He's big in high bricks with Kerry Reams and what's the name of that ag program where he does the soil test? Have you heard of it? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, I believe I do. I don't know John Frank, but I am familiar with Kerry Reams and the lab that does his testing. I'm drawing a blank right now myself.
Yeah, well, John Frank is the one that does the lab, and he's puts out some news articles and so on. And right now, he's running a bunch of news articles, 30 days worth of different things. Every day, he sends out a newsletter.
Huh.
Oh, interesting.
If you're interested, I will forward the link to you so you can look at it.
Yes, I'd love to.
Thank you. Yeah, we'd appreciate that.
How comes I can't remember his ag lab? It's up in Minnesota. I'll think of it. But also interested in some of these times in greenhouse so we can do it the year around.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's a, we've used several different hoop house suppliers. Are you familiar with FarmTech?
Do they put out a magazine every month, Farm?
Well, they have a catalog.
Yes.
Sometimes called FarmTech and sometimes GrowTech. It's all the same company.
I think it's
FarmTech. They have a lot of grower supplies and things.
Yeah.
So we used one of theirs, and you know, it's okay, but we've built several Atlas ones, and we felt like their materials were better quality, maybe a little more expensive too, but you know, more durable.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a man in Kentucky, a Mennonite farmer, who is making hoop houses, and we've bought our last two from him, and we're quite happy with them, and they're very reasonably priced.
when we were in Kentucky, the Amish and Mennonite do a lot with vegetable stands and farmers markets and so on, and they're the ones that always have the early tomatoes, and they start them and run and get them going in the greenhouse, and then they, when the weather breaks and gets nice, well, then they roll the greenhouse off and let run it without the greenhouse.
Oh, they take the greenhouse off.
They take the greenhouse off.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah.
International Ag Lab is the name of the place. International Ag Lab with John Frank.
Okay. All right.
I'll send you the link.
Great.
Then you can subscribe or whatever.
Yeah, thank you. That'll be great.
So, well, I'm always interested in advice and learning new things, so that's the reason I'm with you, Paul and Edwin.
Glad to have you, Jerry. Appreciate hearing from you and hearing about what you're doing, too, and look forward to getting that information about the Ag Lab. Up for learning more
sure.
information myself.
Do you folks primarily deal with one or two or more seed companies or different varieties, you know, with like broccoli, different varieties, so you find works better than others, all the different seeds that way from, or...
We do deal with a few different seed companies. One of the main, basically the main seed company that we work with is Johnny's Seeds.
Uh-huh.
And then we also purchase from High Mowing Seeds, and we've purchased before from, I believe, Territorial Seeds. And
Fedco Seeds.
Fedco and Baker's Creek.
Seeds of Change.
Yeah, Seeds of Change. So there, I guess there's quite a few there.
Yeah.
I would say it's first Johnny's, second High Mowing. High Mowing is an organic seed company out of Vermont.
I see. Then, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, because we're certified organic, we're supposed to purchase organic seeds unless we can't find them.
Yeah.
And so they're a little more expensive being organic, I guess.
Sure.
Anyways, so those are the two we use the most, and then we have a whole host of other ones that we'll look through, and sometimes we can't find what we want in one of those, and we'll get it out of one of the others.
Uh-huh. Are you looking toward or working toward where you save your own seed and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We are interested in that. At the same time, you know, being a working farm, we do use quite a few hybrids because they tend to be more uniform and more reliable.
Yes.
So, you know, we couldn't really save seeds on those.
Well, you could save the seeds on those, but it wouldn't give the hybrid in return.
Yeah, and you're not real sure what you're going to end up with.
Right.
So, and then the other challenge for us is that to save seeds means that you need to let some of your stuff keep growing when we normally would, you know, put that area into a cover crop or another crop And
yes,
you know, it kind of messes up our rotations.
It changes the whole plan up.
Yeah, right, yes.
Well, I was just curious, you know. And
yeah, but we have saved some seeds, particularly squash. And we've saved some Swiss chard seed. And one of my nephews is particularly interested in that, and so he's, my brother's encouraging him in that, and maybe we'll end up saving more seeds in the future. It's something we're interested in, we think it's a good idea, but the practicality of it is we're just trying to make a living right now.
Yeah, like all of us.
Yeah.
I ran across, I don't know whether you're interested, but I ran across last year, I wanted a pumpkin for making pies with. And so I talked to this one farmer at the market, and I said, well, I'm looking for a sugar pumpkin. And he said, what do you want to do with it? I said, make pie. And he said, well, this is what you want here. And it was a big, large, pale yellow or pale orange pumpkin. I says, no, I wanted one for pies. He says, this is. He says, there is no seed on that you can buy anywhere. This is what they call a pie pumpkin, the old farmers, or a field pumpkin. And you won't find the seed anywhere. And I said, really? He says, yeah. And I saved it, and then I got lots of pumpkin out of it. And we did save some seed out of the thing, and so we're going to try it and see what happens.
Well, good.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, also on the course, maybe you might have seen this before, you know, or know about it, but a great resource for seed saving is a book called Seed to Seed.
Okay.
Have you heard of that before?
Don't think so, Paul.
Yeah, just throwing it out there. If you're interested in digging deeper into it, it's a great resource. It's in the resource center of the course under the books and media. There's a little section on seed saving. It's actually the only book in there. But
as far as we know, that's the book on seed saving. It's good.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll look into it and so on, because I'm interested in dabbling in it and learning. And
yeah. Yeah.
So
it's a good thing. We, you know, there are so many varieties of things that are fast disappearing because people just don't grow them.
Yes.
We were visiting up in the mountains in North Carolina recently, and there was a man there that was sharing with us some green beans. And he said, as far as he knew, they used to be fairly common locally, and as far as he knew, it was just himself and another guy growing them right now. And I call them turkey neck green beans. They're about 3/4 inch in diameter, and I don't know, a foot and a half long. They're gigantic green beans, but they tasted really good. He gave us some canned ones. They were really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he shared some seed with us. I'm looking forward to seeing those.
I have a friend that he's going to share some green beans with us. He says it's been in the family for 40, 50, 60 years. And,
wow.
You know, I'm going to try them too. They can them, and you know, everything, you know, from the small green bean to the one that's setting beans in the pod to eating just the bean itself, shelling it out.
Wow. Yeah.
So back on the BCS, I think that was the name of the tractor. How large a plot do you think, you know, you should be able to do with that? Or
they say if you're, you know, if you're working up to 5 acres, it's reasonable to use the BCS. If you're going to do more than that, then you really need something bigger.
Yeah.
We like it a lot, you know, for doing smaller areas and also for doing specific operations.
Do you have any trouble busting side with it?
I'd rather use the big tractor for that.
Uh-huh, that's what I thought.
Now, they do have, they do sell something called a rotary hoe.
It's like a plow that the rotor rotates?
Yeah, and if you go to the Earth Tools website, I believe that he has a video of that in operation.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the video shows him going down a field that I think it has something 2.5 feet tall growing in it, and he's running that rotary plow down it, and it's making a raised bed to the, you know, what it does is it takes the soil that's right in front of it and throws it to the side.
Uh-huh.
And it makes a raised bed. You know, you run back and forth and, you know, be throwing it to the same side each time. And, it chops up that organic matter and incorporates it. And it's pretty amazing. So with something like that, I think you could break sod.
But uh-huh.
not real easily with a tiller.
Yes.
It'll really pull you around. I mean, the tiller tines will catch and start jerking you everywhere.
Yeah. I like the Troy and so on.
Yeah.
Well, I've been wanting to get on the conference call, but it seems like every time I'm busy working or whatever and didn't get, so I had to be driving tonight, so I was able to get on with you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did. It's been fun talking with you and hearing about what you're doing. This is really neat. I'm going to look forward to, you know, keep me posted on what you're doing, how your garden goes and how it grows. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, it's going to be a new experience here in Tennessee, so.
Yeah. Were you gardening much when you were up in Michigan, or? I guess you said you just moved down from Kentucky.
Yes, in Michigan, we had a fair-sized garden. It was about 160 by 120.
Okay, yeah.
So we raised quite a bit of stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
So.
Yeah, well, keep us posted. Sounds like you're doing a great thing.
One other question. What do you think of using the wood chips, and if a guy could find one or rent one or whatever, running the wood chips through a tub grinder to reduce the size to help them break down a whole lot faster?
Yeah, we actually have a facility outside of Nashville that does that, we can buy wood chips from them, and they'll, you can buy them, you know, chipped once or done twice or three times through the grinder. And we bought some triple ground stuff, and it was finer than the leaf mulch that we bought from them.
Uh-huh. It's close to sawdust size, you're saying?
No, it's not that small. It's not that small still, but it was finer than the leaf mulch. You know, the leaf mulch had larger pieces of sticks and, you know, material in it than the triple ground stuff did.
Now, are they grinded in a tub grinder, or is something else?
I believe so. I'm not sure, but
mm-hmm.
but it was, you know, it was real black, and I still would just want to use it as a mulch and not put it in the ground, but I'm sure it will break down faster, considerably faster.
And, you know, you might have, I mean, it would still work as a mulch, but things might grow in it faster as well.
What do you mean, Paul, grow in it faster? You mean like weeds and so on, you're saying, or?
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically of weeds that might grow through faster than something that's not quite as broken down.
Not as fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, we used it to mulch one of our hoop house pads. And I'm trying to remember
the pathways.
Yeah, I think we did it for the whole one, didn't we, on the escrow?
No, we used leaf mulch.
Okay, never mind. I guess that was the leaf mulch that we used on that one. I was thinking of the wrong thing.
When I was there, I stopped in and seen you once, and you showed me your greenhouse, and you had it on a pipe that you use.
Yeah.
Is that what you recommend, or you use? Would you use angle iron and set it on the peak, or to roll it with, or what do you think is a good way to go after you've done a few of them?
The setting it on the pipes is the easiest one to move.
Uh-huh.
But one thing that we weren't particularly happy about with that one is that the wheels keep the frame of the hoop house up off the ground, so you've got a gap between the frame of the hoop house and the ground. And so you have to run your plastic on down further, and it's keep it like a skirt around the hoop house. You have to just sandbag down or hold down somehow. And
for winter seal, for the cold wind.
Yeah, and so then you get weeds growing up, you know, under that plastic, and it's just not as neat and clean. The design that we like better is one in which we use pneumatic wheels. I don't know if you saw that one.
Don't remember it.
We have we used angle iron with the angle facing in. In other words, one side was vertical, and then the horizontal angle was at the bottom and running towards the center of the hoop house.
Uh-huh.
And then we set the bows so that they sat on the bottom of that angle iron. And you know, the bows are cambered so that they when you make a normal hoop house and have the bow sitting in the ground, they exert some outward pressure. In other words, if you just let the bow be loose, it would the bottoms of the bows would be wider apart than they're supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
So the bows are pressing out against the angle iron there.
And uh-huh, the vertical.
Pardon?
Against the vertical part of the angle.
Exactly, yeah. And then we drilled a hole through the bow and the angle iron.
Uh-huh.
And ran a... I think we ended up making it it's a 6 or 7 inch bolt. We had to actually get just by the, what do you call it, just threaded bar and cut our own bolts because we couldn't
all
find
thread.
Any. Yeah, all thread. We couldn't find any bolts that were had enough thread on them.
Uh-huh.
But anyways, we put that bolt through so that it's sticking out on the other side of the angle iron, on the outside of the angle iron, probably about 5 inches.
Uh-huh.
And anyways, it was enough so that we can pop a pneumatic wheel on it and then put a nut on to hold the wheel in place.
Uh-huh.
So we did that for each bow. And then bought a set of pneumatic wheels, and then we just take a pry bar and a block or something to lever it on and just, you know, lift up the edge of the hoop house and high enough to pop the wheel on. And then go on to the next bow and put all the wheels on, and then roll it. But it takes about 6 people, 6 men to move it with the
uh-huh.
pneumatic wheels.
I see. But that gives you a better air seal and so on, weed control.
Yes, we like it because it's setting flat on the ground.
Uh-huh. So you like the Mennonite greenhouse you're getting in Kentucky?
We do, yeah. If they're not on the Internet, so...
I was going to ask you about a webpage or whatever, and... Yeah.
What's this company's name?
We can if you write us, we can send you his contact.
Is he the guy that
okay?
Instructions?
Yeah, he does send you the kit without any instructions.
It's a bit of a puzzle piece to put together.
Isn't that what you normally do anyway? Is throw the instructions away and then start?
Yeah.
So you've learned how to do it, quite obviously, how to put them together.
Yeah. I mean, we've... we've put up two of his hoop houses now. Well, and then my son-in-law put up one as well.
But we had
uh-huh.
6 before tackling his.
Yeah. But Yeah, and we learned, you know, we've learned a few things on his even. He gave us a bunch of purlins, and we thought they were, on the first one, we thought they were all supposed to go on the roof, and then on the second one, we realized two of them were supposed to go on the trusses to
I see.
Keep the trusses in place.
So in other words, you can send him a mail, and he'll send you a catalog most likely, and the way you go.
Yeah, you just might be interested in this also. There's a grower supplier called Deerfield. It's a Mennonite company as well. They're just north of Clarksville. So they're just barely across the line from us into Kentucky. And he's a neighbor. He's just like a mile down the road from Deerfield. And he works with them, and he has a flyer that he puts into their catalog. And so they just kind of refer people to him. So, yeah, his catalog is, it's basically a page. He offers the Gothic arch-shaped hoop houses, and then the just the rounded Quonset-shaped ones. But, you know, whatever size you want, basically. I mean, he offers a number of different widths, and then, of course, you can make it as long as you want.
I see.
So, I mean, you're basically making a custom order when you order from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know. Do you like him? Who does a good job, right?
Yeah, we're quite happy with the quality of the materials, and you know, it seems like a really good combination of low price and quality materials.
Well, this is a really nice private conversation with y'all.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. It's a joy. Glad to have you on. Glad that you got on this evening.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Paul. And I've been trying, but I haven't been very successful, but I seen that I was going to be driving, so I says, I'll jump on tonight and see what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's been fun to talk. Do you have anything else that you...
Well, you know, there's another thing that's interesting, and I don't know, I know very little to nothing about it, and that's all the benefits of cover crops and the different cover crops that benefit and for different things that you're trying to do and so on. I've not played with it at all, so I'm a beginner on cover crops, but I see the importance and things like that, but I just never done it.
Well, when do you, you know, there, I guess there's basically two different kinds. There's summer cover crops and winter cover crops. When do you think you'd want to be putting a cover crop in?
I've only done it once or twice, and that was a winter for rye, and that's all. I'm I see and, you know, read about Johnny doing half of his area in the summer and rotating it between cover and garden, and makes a lot of sense and all that. So that's what I'm looking at, Edwin, is and Paul's, you know, the area that I've got to work with and play with is to, and that's the reason I'm looking at tools to do it with as well. I really need tools to do it with is to take care of the cover crops, you know, and put them back into the soil with the good tools.
Right. Yeah. I could. Would you be interested in reading a book on cover crops?
Why, sure.
There's a under the USDA. There's a something called the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And they have produced a book called, I think it's called Managing Cover Crops.
I see.
And I believe that you can download the book for free.
Okay.
Or you can purchase a copy. But that's probably the best guide on cover crops that I'm aware of.
Okay. I've read on Johnny's seed catalog, you know, about the different ones and for different things, and that's about the extent of what I've learned.
Yeah. We really like this book promotes the idea of mixing a grain and a legume whenever
uh-huh.
you grow a cover crop.
Uh-huh.
And we like to do that. You can do that in the winter and in the summer, both.
Okay.
Of course, the crops would be different, either, you know, winter and summer, but there are legumes and grains that you can grow both either time.
Uh-huh.
And then there are other people that promote the idea of not just growing two things, but maybe 10 or 15 different things.
Uh-huh.
We have
a wide variety for different things, all kinds of things.
Yeah, it seems that the greater variety you grow, the better it is. And if you're wanting to, you know, pursue that even further, and it sounds like you might have space to do this where you are. We were talking with Elliot Coleman, and he was telling us his ideal farm would be, well, say you wanted to grow an acre of vegetables. He said his ideal farm would be, you know, have a 4-acre field, and he would put 1 acre into vegetables, and he would have the other 3 acres in pasture, you know, an improved pasture that would have a mix of legumes and grains and grasses and, you know, different things. He would grow his garden on that 1 acre that year, and then at the end of the year he'd sow his pasture mix on that field, and he'd do up the next field, you know, the next acre for that, so
uh-huh.
that he'd have 3 acres in pasture and 1 in vegetables every year, and be rotating around in four, you know, four different sections.
Uh-huh. Now, would he be more... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He felt like the soil, you know, when that you get when you've just broken sod, he felt like that was the premium soil. Particularly if it's been a well-managed pasture. You know, every time in a pasture, every time the animals chew down a plant, its root mass shrinks to match the size of the plant that's above ground.
Uh-huh.
And all that root dies that was below ground, except for just, you know, what's needed to match the amount of the plant that's above ground.
Uh-huh.
So, and you can duplicate that with mowing.
Yeah.
And you can add a lot of organic matter to your soil just by doing that.
By mowing and then the roots, that part of the root would die, and then as it grows, it would regrow under the soil that way too.
Right, right. And then you mow it again, and it dies back, and you just...
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there are people who recommend, for example, with a cover crop, if you're growing something like sorghum or millet, they recommend cutting it at least once, if you can, before you do your final mowing to incorporate it. You cut it and let it regrow, and you get a lot more organic matter in your soil from the roots from doing that.
Uh-huh. I see. Well, I know when I was on the farm, we always had a certain amount of the farm in hay, and of course then in the spring or fall, usually the spring, well, we'd plow the sod under, and then we always put corn on it because that was a bigger cash crop, and it did a lot better on that than regular ground. So
huh. Yeah.
And of course, with hay, you see, we cut it once to three times a year, so mm-hmm. we're doing the same thing. It didn't, and I didn't realize that's what we were doing. Is, you know, the root mass is what we were changing a great deal of as well.
Yes. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, there's a lot I need to learn.
Yeah. Well, cover crops can be really beneficial.
Well, yeah. I better let you gentlemen go. It's about 9:30.
Yeah, well, thankfully we're still on Central Time, so it's only 8:30 here.
8:30.
But I guess for you, maybe
that's
it might be 9:30, huh?
Yeah, I'm 9:30, but, yeah, I forgot about you're an hour behind, so that's, yeah, forgot about it.
Yeah.
Any other advice? Any other advice that I'm open on?
Okay. Yeah, and definitely, you know, even between conference calls, if you have any questions or any thoughts or anything, shoot me over an email, and we can continue discussion like that as well.
Okay. Appreciate it, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for jumping on this evening. It's been a blessing talking with you.
I just wanted to, Jerry, just wanted to let you know, you can just, that managing cover crops.
Yes.
It's called Managing Cover Crops Profitably.
Oh, okay.
And it's not under NRCS. It's under something called SARE, S-A-R-E.
But so if I just did a search for managing cover crops profitably, will it find it, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And you like I said, you can download it for free.
Oh, you can? Okay.
Yeah.
Just just for your information, I have a network of two other guys that are basically the same age and all that, and we share all of our information that we gain and learn and find out and all that with each other. So we have a lot of fun doing this and enjoying. We're all learning.
That's
yeah.
Great. That's great. It's always more fun and enjoyable to do it with other people. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'll try to look it up, Edwin, and see what I can find on that. That'd be great.
Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Unless you have anything else that pops into your mind at the end here.
We'll send you an email.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
But,
you have a
blessed
evening.
You do. You folks do the same. And thanks for everything you're doing for us.
All righty.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you later.
Uh-huh. Night.
All right. Night-night. Night.